It's time to think about the Bible like you never have before. You're tuned into Christian Questions. Join the conversation now on air or online at ChristianQuestions.com and download our app by searching for Christian Questions Radio. Here's Rick and Jonathan.
Veronica Roth once said, "There is power in self-sacrifice." Good morning, I'm Rick, and this is not your typical Christian commentary as we look at Bible-related topics from a different perspective.
And I'm Jonathan, and that different perspective has its basis in three things: godly principles, family values, honest dialogue, always done in a politically free zone.
Folks, thanks for joining us today. This normally is a call-in format, though we're not going to take calls this morning. We normally caller-friendly, but not today, because we have a very, very, very special program for you, Jonathan. What's the question? What's the subject?
Well, Rick, our question is, what is the legacy of Jesus' death and resurrection? And our theme text is found in John chapter 16, verse 33. "These things I have spoken to you, so that in me you may have peace. In the world you have tribulation, but take courage. I have overcome the world."
The life of Jesus truly is the greatest story ever told. For because of his life, all of mankind will also have life. The life of Jesus reflects all that is good and selfless in humanity. The death of Jesus reflects all that is courageous and noble. And the resurrection of Jesus, well, that reflects all that is godly and loving. Jesus truly did leave us a legacy to follow. Today, we will honor his resurrection by following some of the legacy he left behind for us during his last day. So today, folks, we're just telling you the story again. No on-air calls today. Throughout our first hour, we're actually going to feature a skit guy's portrayal of Simon the Cyrenian, the man called upon to help Jesus carry the cross. But for now, let's get started with our story. We will begin learning of this legacy by following some of the words and actions of Jesus in the upper room the night before his crucifixion. Jesus left us a legacy of humble service. Our first view into Jesus' humility is the washing of his disciples' feet. Jesus did this in response to their continued debate amongst themselves about greatness, which of them would be greatest in the kingdom. Funny how that works. We follow the greatest in the kingdom and spend our time wondering about what we get rather than watching what we are to become. Jesus fixed that. We read from the book of John.
"Now before the feast of Passover, Jesus, knowing that his hour had come, that he would depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, the devil, having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, to betray him, got up from supper and laid aside his garments, and taking a towel, he girded himself. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. So he came to Simon Peter. He said to him, 'Lord, do you wash my feet?' Jesus answered and said to him, 'What I do, you do not realize now, but you will understand hereafter.' Peter said to him, 'Never shall you wash my feet.' Jesus answered him, 'If I do not wash you, you have no part with me.' Simon Peter said to him, 'Lord, then wash not only my feet, but also my hands and my head.'"
The humble actions of washing their feet got their attention, even to the point of embarrassment. As usual, Peter was the one to speak up, and in so doing, he opened the door for the lesson that Jesus was teaching them about a legacy of humility.
"So when he had washed their feet and taken his garments and reclined at the table again, he said to them, 'Do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, the Lord and the teacher, washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I gave you an example that you also should do as I did to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a slave is not greater than his master, nor is one who is sent greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them.
The legacy of humility was clear. If Jesus, your Lord and Master, can do the most humble of tasks for your comfort and cleanliness, then surely you can learn to be humble yourselves before one another in service. This is the true path to greatness in the kingdom. Jesus left us a legacy of courage. Courage is an obvious legacy for everything that Jesus did took courage and fortitude. The courage he was to display this night was perhaps a more subtle type of courage, for he would plainly point out who it was among them that would personally betray him.
I do not speak of all of you. I know the ones I have chosen, but it is that the scripture may be fulfilled. He who eats my bread has lifted up his heel against me. When Jesus had said this, he became troubled in spirit and testified and said, "Truly, truly, I say to you, that one of you will betray me." The disciples began looking at one another, at a loss to know of which one he was speaking. There was reclined on Jesus' bosom one of his disciples whom Jesus loved. So Simon Peter gestured to him and said to him, "Tell us who it is of whom he is speaking." He, leaning back thus on Jesus' bosom, said to him, "Lord, who is it?" Jesus then answered, "This is the one from whom I shall dip the morsel and give it to him." So when he had dipped the morsel, he took and gave it to Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. After the morsel, Satan then entered into him. Therefore Jesus said to him, "What you do, do quickly." So after receiving the morsel, he went out immediately, and it was night.
It takes courage to point out your betrayer, and for many of us, we would want to do so in a similar fashion to Nathan the prophet when he confronted King David in his sins. Remember the story? Nathan cried out, "Thou art the man," in a dramatic flurry. Jesus chose to point out his betrayer in a very different way. He did so in a gesture of friendship. He handed him bread, his own bread for Judas to eat. You see, Jesus loved Judas as he did all sinners. And in spite of the coming betrayal, Jesus showed his care. This was courage in a subtle way. It simply was courage.
I was going into the city to celebrate the Passover, and he was being led out of the city as a Passover lamb. But we didn't understand that. When I got to Jerusalem, it wasn't what I expected. I mean, there was like 10 times more people there than the last time that I'd been there to celebrate Passover, and it just seemed like the whole city was angry, like just mobs of angry people. And all of a sudden this guard, the soldier, he grabs me. I mean, he literally just pulls me out of the crowd, and he says, "For me to carry this guy's cross." If this guy's blood gets on me, it stains me, and I can't celebrate the Passover. That's the whole reason I was there. It was hard to see the man through the blood.
Jesus left us a legacy of leading by example. Imagine the unrest and questions that would have risen in the room. No one there could really grasp that Jesus was going to be betrayed by one of their own number. And they tried to dismiss the previous event as something weird, but certainly not something unjust or treasonous. Jesus, in his typical fashion, would take the experience and use its example for good. His next legacy lesson would be all about following him to learn to live like him, in contrast to what Judas had just done by following Satan's pathway.
Therefore, when he had gone out, Jesus said, "Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself, and will glorify him immediately. Little children, I am with you a little while longer. You will seek me, and as I said to the Jews, now I also say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, where are you going?" Jesus answered, "Where I go, you cannot follow me now, but you will follow later." Peter said to him, "Lord, why can I not follow you right now? I will lay down my life for you." Jesus answered, "Will you lay down your life for me? Truly, truly, I say to you, a rooster will not crow until you deny me three times."
Love one another as I have loved you. His disciples had no idea how deep and binding that commandment was. They could not now comprehend how following this simple command would not only transform their lives, it would change the world. Peter exhibits their childlike following of the Master by proclaiming his allegiance even unto death. Jesus, in turn, assures Peter that he will indeed follow him, but not before the bitterness of a cowardly denial had been washed away. So, Jonathan, in this first segment, as we get started telling the story, we're looking at Jesus encouraging his disciples in that upper room. Now, this is the night before he dies.
Yes.
This is when the night before he is going to go through this incredible trial and difficulty, and he's giving his precious time to them and teaching them a really amazing legacy of what his life really was all about. And on the other side of it, we touched on the skit guy's dramatization of Simon the Cyrenian.
Yes.
You know, and how he's drawn into service, the service of Jesus, to help him carry the cross. And the thing that struck me about that I had never thought of was the idea of the blood. You know, he's come into Jerusalem for Passover.
Mm-hmm.
And if he gets the blood on him, he's now unclean.
Oh, you're right.
And he can't celebrate. And so he has this personal dilemma. This Simon gentleman has this personal dilemma as he's being literally pulled into service by the guards. He just doesn't understand it, but he does what he's supposed to do because he has to. And of course, the rest of the story will unfold as we continue our story.
This is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan here with Rick. Our subject is, what is the legacy of Jesus' death and resurrection? Coming up, humble service, courage and example. What's next?
You're listening to Christian Questions. You're listening to Christian Questions. See videos, hear past shows, and talk to us at ChristianQuestions.com. Here's Rick and Jonathan.
Welcome back. Our subject for today is, what is the legacy of Jesus' death and resurrection? We're live Sunday mornings from 7 to 9 Eastern and 6 to 8 Central. That means we're on right now. No on-air calls this morning. We're telling a story, but you can sign up for CQ Rewind, the full edition, at ChristianQuestions.com.
And it's important, folks. We normally would take calls, but this morning it really is, especially in the first hour, it's about Jesus communicating with his followers before he's going to be tried and killed. And it's about the sensitivity and the depth of what his communication to them not only meant to them, but also means to us. So let's get back to our story. Jesus left us a legacy of promise. It stands to reason that if you're following someone, then there must be some destination, some end result that you're moving towards. As Jesus furthered his legacy, he would now build toward revealing that end. He began with humility and then added courage and example. All of these legacy building blocks are necessary if you're going to be tried and true as a follower. Being a true follower needs clarity of direction. Jesus would now focus them beyond the coming storm. We continue in the book of John.
Do not let your heart be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you. For I go to prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. And you know the way where I am going. Thomas said to him, Lord, we do not know where you are going. How do we know the way? Jesus said to him, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me.
Powerful words that deliver a powerful promise. Our Father has a place for us with him, Jesus said. It was so, and that means that it is a sound truth. Jesus also told us how to get there, and it was no surprise. Follow Jesus as the way. Learn from Jesus about the truth, and inherit from Jesus the life. Powerful words, delivering a powerful promise.
Truly, truly, I say to you, he who believes in me, the works that I do, he will do also, and greater works than these he will do, because I go to the Father. Whatever you ask in my name, that will I do, so that the Father may be glorified in the Son. If you ask me anything in my name, I will do it. If you love me, you will keep my commandments. I will ask the Father, and he will give you another helper, that he may be with you forever. That is the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, because it does not see him or know him. But you know him, because he abides with you and will be in you. I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you. After a little while, the world will no longer see me, but you will see me. Because I live, you will live also.
So the promise expands. Not only does the Father want us to rely on him, he sends us reinforcement to help us rely on him. Jesus reveals that the very same power and influence of God that Jesus himself was given would soon be given to his truest followers. So even when Jesus would be absent from us, we would still have the source of strength, the same source Jesus had to overcome. Jesus left us a legacy of hope. What do promises given with integrity bring us? They bring us hope. They bring hope, and Jesus would now verbalize that hope so it would be an unmistakable foundation for the future.
Jesus answered and said to him, If anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and will come to him and make our abode with him. He who does not love me does not keep my words, and the word which you hear is not mine, but the Father's who sent me. peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Do not let your heart be troubled, nor let it be fearful. You heard that I said to you, I go away, and I will come to you. If you loved me, you would have rejoiced because I go to the Father. For the Father is greater than I. Now I have told you before it happens, so that when it happens, you may believe.
Mixed with hope is the harsh reality of their upcoming season of bitter trial. And Jesus, again, sprinkles that bitter truth trial in with hope, so that it will indeed be bearable. Let me remind you that it is Jesus who's about to be tormented and killed. Yet it is Jesus who lovingly prepares his friends for their parts. The legacy of promise and hope are here. They are written and available even now. What's keeping us from making them our own? Such a legacy came with a price. Let us return to the dramatization of Simon the Cyrenian, recalling his experience with Jesus on the cross.
And then our eyes met. And I knew this man was not a liar. He was not a crazy man with grand ideas. He was the Messiah. I carried what I could, but he carried most of it. We began to walk. I heard the insults that they shouted at him and now at me. I felt the spit. I felt his blood on me. They'd taken a crown made of thorns and then they smashed it on his head. And blood ran into his eyes. They laid him out on a cross. And they nailed his hands and his feet to it. And they lifted it up.
That is such a dramatic sense of the connection that Simon the Cyrenian would have had with Jesus. And that brings us to our next legacy that Jesus left us. Jesus left us a legacy of connection. All of the previous legacy lessons that Jesus taught on this last night of his life were taught for the benefit of those who followed him then and now. The humility, courage, example, promise, and hope all led to this next building block, that of connection. Jesus would now, with the grace and eloquence, explain to all of us just how dependent we are upon him and the Father. This would be a connection lesson for the ages. We go to John chapter 15.
I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that bears fruit, he prunes it, so that it may bear more fruit. You are already clean because of the word which I have spoken to you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, so neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me, and I in him, he bears much fruit, for apart from me you can do nothing. My Father is glorified by this, that you bear much fruit, and so prove to be my disciples. These things I have spoken to you, so that my joy may be in you, and that your joy may be made full.
The lesson is dramatic in its simplicity. The branches, in this lesson, cannot survive without the vine, and neither can the vine or the branches flourish without the vine dresser. We as followers are tasked with the responsibility of growing and producing fruit. To do so, we draw our nourishment from Jesus and submit to the pruning of our Father. You see, our worth is in our connection. The legacy that Jesus was showing us was to thrive in connection, to submit to what might seem to be harsh trials for the purpose of needing Jesus ever more, so the harvest of our lives will be abundant. A simple and dramatic lesson.
This is my commandment, that you love one another, just as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that one laid down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. This I command you, that you love one another. If the world hates you, you know that it has hated me before it hated you. Remember the word that I said to you, a slave is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also.
So Jesus again sprinkles in the hard reality of life while he passes on this legacy of connection. His point is simple. Connect. Connect to him and connect to the Father, and the trials of this short life will fall away into the distant past, as eternity with Jesus and the Father will ever unfold. This second segment, and Jonathan, this last lesson on connection is such a powerful lesson. And you know, you imagine that Jesus is walking with his disciples on the way to the Garden of Gethsemane, and perhaps they're walking by a vineyard, and he's trying to help them understand how to be connected. Maybe he stops and looks and says, "Oh, okay, here's the way to do it." I mean, who knows? But his mind was always focused on following, finding a way to show his disciples how much he loved them.
This is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan here with Rick. Our subject is, what is the legacy of Jesus' death and resurrection? Coming up, so the apostles were connected, but did they really get what was about to happen? That's next.
You're listening to Christian Questions. You're listening to Christian Questions. See videos, hear past shows, and talk to us at ChristianQuestions.com. Here's Rick and Jonathan.
Welcome back. Our subject for today is, what is the legacy of Jesus' death and resurrection? We're live Sunday mornings from 7 to 9 Eastern and 6 to 8 Central. That means we're on right now. No on-air calls this morning. We're telling a story. But don't forget to sign up for CQ Rewind the Full Edition at our website, ChristianQuestions.com.
That's right. With CQ Rewind the Full Edition, you can get all of the script from this morning, all of the scriptures, where they're coming from. And just it helps to put the story into a bigger perspective, because this is truly the greatest story ever told. So with that said, why don't we get back to the story?
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but was blood, but now I see.
Jesus left us a legacy of foresight and prophecy. Jesus has shown his followers a glorious and grace-filled future. With all of the previous legacy building blocks in place as inspiration, Jesus now focuses on the pitfalls of the road that we all must follow. We read from the book of John, chapter 16.
These things I have spoken to you, so that you may be kept from stumbling. They will make you outcasts from the synagogue, but an hour is coming for everyone who kills you to think that he is offering service to God. These things they will do because they have not known the Father or me.
Jesus' foresight is powerful and calming. He tells his friends that their future trials will be as a result of his influence, which will live in them, and this fact would give them courage. On the heels of this encouragement, he delves into a deep and veiled prophecy.
But I tell you the truth, it is to your advantage that I go away. For if I do not go away, the Helper will not come to you. But if I go, I will send him to you. And he, when he comes, will convict the world concerning sin and righteousness and judgment. Concerning sin, because they do not believe in me. And in concerning righteousness, because I go to the Father, and you no longer see me. And concerning judgment, because the ruler of this world has been judged.
This subtle prophecy was aptly fulfilled through the Apostle Peter at Pentecost. It was his words driven by the Holy Spirit, the holy influence of God that carried these three convictions to the world. Jesus now goes back to foresight regarding the harsh experience just before them to provide needed encouragement.
A little while, you will no longer see me. And again, a little while, you will see me. Truly, truly, I say to you that you will weep and lament, but the world will rejoice. You will grieve, but your grief will be turned into joy. Therefore, you too have grief now, but I will see you again, and your heart will rejoice, and no one will take your joy away from you.
It truly is darkest before the dawn, and Jesus wove the traumatic experience ahead into a tapestry of hope and joy. Godly hope and godly joy.
Truly, truly, I say to you, if you ask the Father for anything in my name, he will give it to you. Until now, you have asked for nothing in my name. Ask, and you will receive, so that your joy may be made full. But the Father himself loves you, because you loved me, and have believed that I came forth from the Father. I came forth from the Father, and have come into the world. I am leaving the world again and going to the Father.
Jesus' words became ever more plain as his encouragement continued. He would again and again lift his beloved followers' spirits to prepare them for the next injection of harsh reality.
Behold, an hour is coming, and has already come, for you to be scattered, each to his own home, and to leave me alone. And yet, I am not alone, because the Father is with me. These things I have spoken to you, so that in me you may have peace. In the world you have tribulation, but take courage. I have overcome the world.
I have overcome the world. These all-powerful words of victory would end this period of preparation where Jesus would lay a foundation for his friends to build upon. The legacy in his words and actions that he left for us was strong and sure. Humble service, to be willing to do the things that most would consider beneath themselves, because in this way you serve. Courage, to look your betrayer in the eye and give him his own choices to make. Leading by example, by loving us first and fully. Promise, Jesus announced and unlocked an access to the grace of God through his own name, and that access was full of God's love for us. Hope, standing upon the shoulders of promise given with integrity, is hope, a hope beyond our imagination. Connection, because God was now accessible through Jesus. This also meant that we could be connected to him through his grace. Foresight and prophecy. All of these building blocks of legacy led Jesus to meticulously prepare his disciples for what was to come through a mixing of encouragement with the harsh realities of their future.
And he had all of his weight on that one spike through his feet. And he would push up with all of his might and gasp for a breath to stay alive. And I couldn't watch it. He did that for hours. I couldn't watch it. And I looked down and I remember seeing my hands. My hands were stained with his blood, the blood that I thought would make me unclean. And I realized it's the blood that makes me clean. He breathed his last breath and he died. And that was the day that I helped Jesus carry my cross. He hung and died on my cross.
Jesus left us a legacy of prayer, deep, selfless, and honest prayer. As Jesus begins what truly should be known as the Lord's Prayer, listen to the deep, sensitive, and sincere praises he gives to God. Listen as he rehearses his own place and mission to do the Father's will and to be totally in harmony with him. We read in John 17.
Jesus spoke these things, and lifting up his eyes to heaven, he said, "Father, the hour has come. Glorify your Son, that the Son may glorify you. Even as you have gave him authority over all flesh, that to all whom you have given him, he may give eternal life. This is eternal life, that they may know you, the only true God, and Jesus Christ whom you have sent. I glorified you on the earth, having accomplished the work which you have given me to do. Now, Father, glorify me together with yourself, with the glory which I had with you before the world was. I have manifested your name to the men whom you gave me out of the world. They were yours, and you gave them to me, and they have kept your word. Now they have come to know that everything you have given me is from you."
Jesus begins with praise. He acknowledges his own position and authority, and then brings the prayer down to earth and now begins to focus on his followers. His love for them and his protective instincts for them are truly overwhelming here. For it is Jesus who is going to be taken, beaten, accused, tried, derided, insulted, and crucified. Yet his heart, his focus, and his mind are all set firmly on those whom he loved. He would not, he could not let them go without first firmly holding them in his own hands and with his own heart, and then tenderly and carefully handing them over to the Father, the great protector of all those who seek his will.
I ask on their behalf. I do not ask on behalf of the world, but of those whom you have given me, for they are yours. I am no longer in the world, and yet they themselves are in the world. And I come to you, Holy Father, keep them in your name, the name which you have given me, that they may be one even as we are. While I was with them, I was keeping them in your name, which you have given me. I guarded them, and not one of them perished, but the son of perdition, so that the scripture may be fulfilled. It was given them, I gave them your word, and the world has hated them, because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. I do not ask you to take them out of the world, but to keep them from the evil one. They are not in the world, even as I am not in the world. Sanctify them in truth. Your word is truth. As you sent me into the world, I also have sent them into the world.
See the care with which Jesus is giving his stewardship of the disciples over to his Father? Do you see how he is rightfully proclaiming them to be God's? But he's telling God just how much he cares for their safety and growth. Jesus is reluctant to let them go, not for any doubt that they will be safe in the hands of God, but for the attachment that had grown between he and them. Jesus does not stop just with those who were with him then. Oh no. He goes on to include each and every soul down through the long age of the gospel who would be dedicated to his footsteps as well.
For their sakes, I sanctify myself, that they themselves also may be sanctified in truth. I do not ask on behalf of these alone, but for those also who believe in me through their word, that they may all be one, even as you, Father, are in me, and I in you, that they also may be in us, so that the world may believe that you sent me. The glory which you have given me, I have given to them, that they may be one just as we are one. Father, I desire that you also, whom you have given me, be with me where I am, so that they may see my glory, which you have given me. For you loved me before the foundation of the world.
Think about it. We are included in the last undisturbed prayer that Jesus was able to pray before the great ordeal of his life began. These were precious moments of preparation for him, and he saw fit to use them to lay our lives in the hands of God, along with the lives of his disciples. So, the legacy of Jesus included the building block of prayer. Prayer, his deep, selfless, and honest prayer, was laid out before us and was actually written down so that we could truly know what it means to pray and what it meant to be prayed for. These would be the last truly peaceful moments of his human life, as the road to our salvation would now require him to suffer without mercy.
'Twas grace that taught my heart to feed, and grace my feet relieved. How great
that's a look at John chapter 17, and perhaps, hopefully, it's a look in a way that we haven't looked at it too often before. And so, Jonathan, as we wrap up this segment, Jesus left us a legacy, several pieces of a legacy. Let's just list out the things that jump out of this legacy.
Humble service, courage, leading by example, promise, hope, connection, foresight and prophecy, prayer, deep selfless and honest prayer.
And as we look at these pieces of the legacy of Jesus, this is in the preparation before he is going to be brought to trial and crucified and so forth. And folks, in the second hour, we're going to look at that part of the story and build more of the legacy that Jesus left us on top of what he's already left us. It is an amazing story. Please, please do not miss the second hour because there's so much more to come. Folks, it's all about death and then life. The story of Jesus. For Jonathan and Rick and Christian Questions, we will be back after the news and all that.
Christian Questions.
But until then, think about it.
It's time to think about the Bible like you never have before. You're tuned into Christian Questions. Join the conversation now on air or online at ChristianQuestions.com and download our app by searching for Christian Questions Radio. Here's Rick and Jonathan.
Susie Kasem once said, selflessness, humility, truthfulness. These are the three marks of an honorable man. Good morning. Welcome back. I'm Rick, and this is not your typical Christian commentary as we look at Bible-related topics from a different perspective. And Jonathan, we are not taking on-air calls this morning. Why is that?
Because this is a story, Rick.
And what's the subject?
What is the legacy of Jesus' death and resurrection? And Rick, our theme text is found in John chapter 16, verse 33. These things I have spoken to you, so that in me you may have peace. In the world you have tribulation, but take courage, I have overcome the world.
So we are telling the story of in the first segment, it really was the last night of Jesus' life and how he spent it really focused on his disciples. And now we're getting into the actual trial and crucifixion part of the story. So folks, again, no on-air calls this morning. We do want you to subscribe, though, to Seek Your Rewind, the full edition, if you don't already do so, because you can get the entire transcript there. It's a free service from ChristianQuestions.com. And there's some news, Jonathan, before we get back to our story. I just got word that Christian Questions listeners can follow us on Instagram at Christian Questions Radio.
Oh, that's cool.
It is cool. I'm not sure what that means, but I know it's cool. Okay, that's really the way it goes. All right, so folks, we're going to now get back to the story, to the account and the legacy that Jesus left for us. As we continue our journey along the road of the legacy of Jesus' last day, we now come to a point from which there would be no returning. Jesus was now only hours away from being taken prisoner, and he had spent his valuable time previous to this building, encouraging, informing, inspiring, and strengthening his disciples. He now looked for a final opportunity to focus and strengthen himself to withstand the tsunami of strain that would soon engulf him. Jesus left us a legacy of submission. When facing extreme stress in our lives, we all have favorite places or circumstances that we seek to help us find strength and peace. And Jesus was no different. The Garden of Gethsemane was such a place for him, as it offered an ancient beauty and rustic presence in which to deeply communicate with his heavenly Father. So they went to the garden. Jesus, knowing that he would soon be taken prisoner, wanted to be in communion with his Father in this place of peace, with his most beloved friends at his side. We read from John chapter 18.
When Jesus had spoken these words...
Now those words were the prayer of John 17 from the last segment.
He went forth with his disciples over the ravine of Kidron, where there was a garden in which he had entered with his disciples. Now Judas also, who was betraying him, knew the place, for Jesus had often met there with his disciples. Then Jesus came with them, to a place called Gethsemane and said to his disciples, "Sit here a while. I go over there and pray." And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee and began to be grieved and distressed. Then he said to them, "My soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch with me." And he went a little beyond them and fell on his face and prayed, saying, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me, yet not as I will, but as you will." And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping and said to Peter, "So you men could not keep watch with me for 1 hour? Keep watching and praying that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." He went away again a second time and prayed, saying, "My Father, if this cannot pass away unless I drink it, your will be done."
Just as the storm rises over Galilee, the storm of trial rose quickly upon Jesus as he knew that betrayal was imminent. His spiritual instincts had led him to pray for the physical strength and the spiritual courage necessary to overcome. And pray he did, over and over and over. Each time he prayed, he became more focused. Each time he prayed, he further solidified his legacy of submission, for the end result of this struggle was simply, "Nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done."
Then an angel from heaven appeared to him and gave him strength. In his anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat became like great drops of blood falling down on the ground.
God saw the burden of his son and sent help and strength. This was a sign that he was in fact focused on completing what he had started, the payment of the ransom for all. Every part of Jesus was engaged in this final prayer as a free man. Every part of him strained and struggled, and every part of him, in the end, did acquiesce. "Nevertheless, not my will, but thy will be done."
Again he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. So leaving them again, he went away and prayed for the third time, saying the same words. Then he came to the disciples and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and taking your rest? See, the hour is at hand. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand."
Such a submissive will, such a final resolve, such a legacy for us to follow. A crowd with torches and swords and armor approached. It was led by an unarmed man, an unarmed and familiar man.
Judas approached Jesus to kiss him, but Jesus said to him, "Judas, is it with a kiss that you are betraying the Son of Man?" So Judas brought a detachment of soldiers together with police from the chief priests and the Pharisees, and they came there with lanterns and torches and weapons. He asked them, "Whom are you looking for?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus answered, "I told you that I am he. So if you are looking for me, let these men go." This was to fulfill the word that he had spoken, "I do not lose a single one of them whom you gave me."
So this is what betrayal looks like. Lanterns, torches, and weapons, and a contingent of chief priests and Pharisees, all there to apprehend a man who never even used a sword or a spear, and whose life was spent healing, teaching, and encouraging the masses. Even so, Jesus was willing to be taken. After all, Jesus was leaving us a legacy of submission, and he knew that his Father's will was being done.
Then Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's slave and cut off his right ear. The slave's name was Malchus. Jesus said to Peter, "Put your sword back into its sheath. Am I not to drink the cup that my Father has given me?" "No more of this." And he touched his ear and healed him. Then Jesus said to the chief priests, the officers of the temple police, and the elders who had come for him, "Have you come out with swords and clubs, as it were, I a bandit? When I was with you day after day in the temple, you did not lay hands on me, but this is your hour and the power of darkness. But all this has taken place to fulfill the scriptures of the prophets."
We as humans always seem to resort to our true selves, especially when pressure is applied to our lives. Now, for the Pharisees, true self was here reflected in illegal actions in the dark of night. For Judas, true self was to do what was necessary for the sake of gain. For Peter, it was to leap into action. And for Jesus, true self was to restore order, to acquiesce to the Father's will, and to heal, even if that healing was for the benefit of an enemy.
Then all the disciples left him and fled. Those who had seized Jesus led him away to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were gathered together. But Peter was following him at a distance, as far as the courtyard of the high priest, and entered in and sat down with the officers to see the outcome.
Jesus was now on his way to Annas, the son-in-law of Caiaphas, the high priest. Following behind in the distance were Peter and John, no doubt bewildered and unsure. They kept their distance as they could not settle for just hiding as the others had done. Once they got to the palace of the high priest, John had to arrange for Peter's entrance with a woman by the gate. It would have been shortly after midnight, and this would be the first phase of the religious trial that Jesus was subjected to. So much more was in motion now. Peter wanted to be near Jesus, yet he was afraid, and then ended up even denying that he knew Jesus, who Jesus was, three separate times. Jesus saw Peter at his third denial, and Peter was broken. He went out, and he wept bitterly. Through this night of pain, Jesus was tried, falsely accused, beaten, whipped, and mocked. Through this night of pain, Jesus stood his ground, but never spoke a word in his own defense. Through this night of pain, Jesus' physical strength was being drained away, for there is only so much a human body can bear. Through this night of pain, Jesus stayed true to his resolve to do the Father's will. Through this night of pain, Jesus lived his legacy of submission. Why? Why endure so much? Well, the answer is really simple. He did it for love. He loved his Father and always did his Father's will. He loved his disciples and was willing to suffer for them. And he loved all of mankind and was willing to die for them. He would die for the mocking soldiers, the lying witnesses against him, the arrogant Pharisees, and those who would shout, "Crucify him!" He would die for the common man. Love. That's why. So, Jonathan, as we wrap up this portion of our story. This is in Gethsemane, and perhaps it is outside of the actual event of the crucifixion. It's perhaps one of the most dramatic periods of time in Jesus' entire life, because he has spent time giving to his disciples, and now he's looking for something back, and he doesn't get it. You know, watch and pray with me. Couldn't you just watch 1 hour? But they weren't capable. They weren't strong enough to do so.
He truly bore it himself.
And that's the point. So in spite of not being able to get what he felt like he needed, he went and he plowed through. And God, in place of giving him the help of his disciples, sent an angel. Sent an angel to strengthen him, to build him up, to encourage him, to assure him that what he was doing was in fact exactly the right thing.
This is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan here with Rick. Our subject is, what is the legacy of Jesus' death and resurrection? Coming up, Jesus' submission would lead to his death. Then what? That's next.
You're listening to Christian Questions. You're listening to Christian Questions. See videos, hear past shows, and talk to us at ChristianQuestions.com. Here's Rick and Jonathan.
Welcome back. Our subject for today is, what is the legacy of Jesus' death and resurrection? We're live Sunday mornings from 7 to 9 Eastern and 6 to 8 Central. That means we're on right now. No on-air calls this morning. We're telling a story. But if you have a smartphone, don't forget to get your free app at your app store. Go to Christian Questions Radio.
And that's right. And you can message us on your app during the program. We're not necessarily going to reference it, but we'd love to hear from you if you'd like to do that. And we also did want to just re-announce that Christian Question listeners can now follow us on Instagram at Christian Questions Radio. It's Instagram at Christian Questions Radio. And as we go back to our story, folks, we want to urge you to subscribe to Seek Your Rewind, the full edition. It's a free service at ChristianQuestions.com or through the app. And by doing so, you can get the entire transcript from this program to put the story in order, because it's such an inspirational story to look at all of the pieces of legacy that Jesus put in place for us in such a short time, at the most difficult time of his life. So, all of that being said, let's get back to our story. Now we come to it. We have observed Jesus in his last day and the multiple building blocks of legacy that he had left for us. He immersed himself in prayer, secured his strength, and then was taken by force to be beaten, to be lied about, and to be humiliated throughout the night. Early morning brought him before Pilate, then Herod, then Pilate again, and it was here that the deafening cry of "Crucify him!" sealed his fate. This would bring yet another building block of his legacy. Jesus left us a legacy of completion. We see it unfold at the final ordeal of Calvary. And bearing his cross, he went forth into a place called the place of a skull, which is called in Hebrew Golgotha.
And as they led him away, they laid hold upon Simon, a Cyrenian. On him they laid the cross, that he might bear it after Jesus. And there followed him a great company of people and of women, which also bewailed and lamented him. But Jesus, turning unto them, said, "Daughters of Jerusalem, weep not for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children."
And Pilate wrote a title and put it on the cross. And the writing was, "Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews." This title then read many of the Jews, and it was written in Hebrew and Greek and Latin. Then said the chief priests of the Jews to Pilate, "Write not, the King of the Jews, but that he said, 'I am King of the Jews.'" Pilate answered, "What I have written, I have written."
And with him they crucified two thieves, the one on his right hand and the other on his left.
And they that passed by reviled him, wagging their heads and saying, "Thou that destroyest the temple and buildest it up in 3 days, save thyself. If thou be the Son of God, come down from the cross." Likewise, all the chief priests were mocking him, and the scribes and the elders said, "He saved others, himself he cannot save. If he be the King of Israel, let him come down now from the cross, and we will believe him. He trusted in God. Let him deliver him now, if he can have him, for he said, 'I am the Son of God.'" The thieves also, which were crucified with him, cast the same in his teeth. And the soldiers also mocked him, coming to him and offering him vinegar, and saying, If thou be the King of the Jews, save thyself.
Now there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother, his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Cleophas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus therefore saw his mother, and the disciples standing by, whom he loved, he saith unto his mother, Woman, behold thy son. Then he saith he to the disciple, Behold thy mother. And from that hour that disciple took her into his own home. And one of the malefactors which were hanged railed on him, saying, If thou be Christ, save thyself and us. But the other answering rebuked him, saying, Dost not thou fear God, seeing thou art in the same condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we have received the due reward of our deeds. But this man hath done nothing amiss. And he said unto Jesus, Lord, remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom. And Jesus said unto him, Verily I say unto thee today, shalt thou be with me in paradise.
We read from Isaiah 53. He was despised and forsaken of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And like one from whom men hid their face, he was despised, and we did not esteem him. Surely our griefs he himself bore, and our sorrows he carried. Yet we ourselves esteemed him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. Back to the crucifixion accounts. And when the sixth hour was come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, which being interpreted, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? After this, Jesus, knowing that all things were now accomplished, that the scripture might be fulfilled, saith, I thirst. And some of them that stood by when they heard it said, Behold, he calls Elias. And one ran and filled a sponge full of vinegar and put it on a reed and gave to him to drink, saying, Let alone, let us see whether Elias will come and take him down. When Jesus therefore had received the vinegar, he said, It is finished. Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. And having said thus, he bowed his head and gave up the spirit.
And behold, the veil of the temple was rent in twain from the top to the bottom, and the earth did quake, and the rocks rent. Now with the centurion and they that were watching, Jesus saw the earthquake and those things that were done. They feared greatly, saying, Truly this was the Son of God. There were also women looking on from a distance. Among them were Mary Magdalene, and Mary, the mother of James, the younger, and of Joseph and Salome. These used to follow him and provide for him when he was in Galilee. And there were many other women who had come up to him from Jerusalem.
It was in this manner that Jesus the Christ was crucified. And it was in this manner that Jesus the Christ did die. Back to Isaiah. All of us like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned to his own way. But the Lord has caused the iniquity of us all to fall on him. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. Like a lamb led to the slaughter, and like a sheep that is silent before its shearers, so he did not open his mouth. So Jesus died at 3 p.m. This was the precise time that the Passover lamb was slain. Have you ever stopped a moment to think about how eloquent God's plan is in its precision? All of the harried events that led up to Jesus dying were orchestrated by those who wanted him dead and gone. And all they really accomplished was to secure that he would live and he would save even them. This was exactly as God had foretold in the original Passover. This was exactly the legacy of Jesus leaving us, the legacy of completion. This was why Jesus had come. This is why he lived. And now he had died.
Were you there when they laid him in the tomb? And were you there when they laid his precious body in the tomb? Oh, sometimes it causes me to tremble.
Harsh as it might sound, the business of burial had to be tended to. So the account continues from the book of John. Then the Jews, because it was the day of preparation, so that the bodies would not remain on the cross on the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was a high day, asked Pilate that their legs might be broken and that they might be taken away. So the soldiers came and broke the legs of the first man and of the other who was crucified with him. But coming to Jesus, when they saw that he was already dead, they did not break his legs. But one of the soldiers pierced his side with a spear, and immediately blood and water came out.
Evening had already come, because it was the preparation day, that is, the day before the Sabbath. After these things, Joseph of Arimathea, being a disciple of Jesus, but a secret one for fear of the Jews, asked Pilate that he might take away the body of Jesus, and Pilate granted permission. So he came and took away his body. Nicodemus, who had first come to him by night, also came, bringing a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 100 pounds worth. So they took the body of Jesus and bound it in linen wrappings with the spices, as is the burial custom of the Jews. Now in the place where he was crucified there was a garden, and in the garden a new tomb, in which no one had yet been laid. Therefore, because of the Jewish day of preparation, since the tomb was nearby, they laid Jesus there. Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, were looking on to see where he was laid.
The man Christ Jesus had done what he came to do. He lived, he taught, he called out followers, he healed, he stood firm, and he suffered and died. His mission as a man was forever complete, and his legacy was one of completion. Jesus had completed his mission, but in so doing, things were left in limbo. Think about it. What do you do now? You've just been a part of the most sensational and, from a human perspective, most unlikely turn of events you could have ever imagined. You spent the last few years of your life following Jesus. You listened while he taught. You stood in awe as he schooled the Pharisees. You marveled at his miracles. You walked with him. And he was not only your master, he was also your friend. He made everyone feel special. And now this. He's gone. Unjustly crucified. And you did nothing to stop it. Now what? So, Jonathan, as we take a look at this part of the story, obviously the drama of the crucifixion is breathtaking all by itself. But one of the things that we want to just touch on as well is, let's go to Matthew 27. Because, you know, you've got the questions, okay, what do the disciples do? What do they do? What did the Pharisees do at this point? I think there's an important part of this.
Now on the next day, the day after the preparation, the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered together with Pilate and said, "Sir, we remember that he was still alive, that deceiver said, 'After 3 days I am to rise again.' Therefore, give orders for the grave to be made secure until the third day. Otherwise, his disciples may come and steal him away and say to the people, 'He has risen from the dead,' and the last deception will be worse than the first." Pilate said to them, "You have a guard, go. Make it as secure as you know how." And they went and made the grave secure, and along with the guard they set a seal on the stone.
So the Pharisees were all about making sure that nothing else could happen, because they, you know, I think they were deeply afraid that Jesus would rise from the dead.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were very paranoid.
Yes, and so they put their own guard in place to make sure that nothing would happen. They were protecting their investment of time and effort to keep the name of Jesus dead.
This is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan, here with Rick. Our subject is, what is the legacy of Jesus' death and resurrection? Coming up, what was the last legacy that Jesus left for us? That's next.
You're listening to Christian Questions. You're listening to Christian Questions. See videos, hear past shows, and talk to us at ChristianQuestions.com. Here's Rick and Jonathan.
Welcome back. Our subject for today is, what is the legacy of Jesus' death and resurrection? We're live Sunday mornings from 7 to 9 Eastern and 6 to 8 Central. That means we're on right now. We're not taking on-air calls this morning. We're telling a story. But if you would like to write to us, you can write to us at Christian Questions, P.O. Box 1837, New London, Connecticut, 06320.
And Jonathan, as we tell this story, we've gotten through all the really hard parts. And now, thankfully, we get to do the really, really great part. And that's what, you know, that's what everybody celebrates today on this Resurrection Sunday, is the raising of the dead from Jesus and really the salvation of the world as a result. So let's get back to our story. The legacy journey that we have been on has brought us to a full and magnificent conclusion. We have seen Jesus show us humble service, courage, leading by example, promise, hope, connection, foresight, and prophecy and prayer, deep, selfless, and honest prayer. All of these things were in a space of a few hours on the day before his death. And all of these things were directly pointed at us to teach us exactly what it means to be a footstep follower of the Master. He then demonstrated the two aspects of legacy that cost him dearly. First was submission, full and unreserved submission to the will of the Father. And then was completion, which was the essential proof that his submission was genuine. Completion cost him his life. God's mercy, love, and plan provided for Jesus to be raised, and that would bring the final building block of his legacy into play. Jesus left us a legacy of joy. Let us now bask in the glory of the discovery of his resurrection and enter into the joy of his life.
And when the Sabbath was past, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James and Salome, had bought sweet spices that they may come and anoint him. And very early in the morning, the first day of the week, they came unto the sepulchre at the rising of the sun. And they said among themselves, "Who shall roll us away the stone from the door of the sepulchre?" And when they looked, they saw that the stone was rolled away, for it was very great. And entering into the sepulchre, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, clothed in a long white garment, and they were afraid. And he saith unto them, "Be not afraid. Ye seek Jesus of Nazareth, which was crucified. Why seek ye the living among the dead? He is risen. He is not here. Behold the place where they laid him. Remember how he spake unto you when he was yet in Galilee, saying, The Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men, and be crucified, and the third day rise again? And they remembered his words. But go your way, tell your disciples, and Peter, that he goeth before you into Galilee. There shall ye see him. And he said unto you.
Of course, Peter and John raced to the tomb only to find it empty. What would have gone through their heads? Would they have instantly seen the big picture, or would the big picture have had to grow within them? Let's listen to the Skit Guys again, and a dramatization of this moment between Peter and John. Let's listen to how they put the story in perspective as only they can do.
Peter, stop!
We'll get the guys to help with the search and then we'll divide up, all right? We'll have Andrew take the north, Bartholomew will take the bottom.
Peter, stop! Look, I'm just as confused about this as you are.
Someone stole him. That's the only logical explanation, John.
Wait, okay? Look, what we witnessed today...
The guards, they took him. We have to move swiftly. We have to rebury the body properly.
Look, Peter, stop! Okay, we need to go tell the others.
Tell them what?
What we saw.
We saw nothing.
Exactly.
John, do you not understand that they are trying to stop us? That's why Jesus kept waking us up to pray. That's why they got to Judas. That's why they arrested Jesus.
Just the other day, I was looking at him. I was looking him in the eye, and I told him that I loved him, and that I would follow him to the ends of the earth.
That must have been an awfully tough moment for Peter, just to try to put it all in perspective. Sometimes we have a hard time getting it. Jesus had told his disciples much of what was going to happen, but just like the rest of us, hearing about a traumatic event is entirely different than living one. Imagine the mixture of confusion, hope, fear, and uncertainty, as the disciples must have experienced. All of these emotions are necessary to be able to fully and finally arrive at the joy that Jesus wants us to have. After all, he left us a legacy of joy. Let's go back to Peter and John.
He was supposed to be our king.
He is a king. When we were in the tomb, I remember something Jesus said.
The linens were just lying there. That they were just lying there.
No, no. Think bigger. Look, all of this, all of it, was supposed to be preparing us for this moment, for that empty tomb. We just couldn't see it.
Couldn't see what?
Okay. When Mary came back and said that the tomb was empty and that the angel of the Lord was there, that's when it started to come back.
John, enough. We can reminisce about this later. Jesus is missing. We have to go find him.
He's not missing. That's the point. Look, he was trying to tell us about this. Jesus was preparing us for this. He's risen. Peter, he's a different kind of king, and he always was.
Jesus certainly is a different kind of king. And I love the way the dramatization just kind of puts that in perspective. And you're dealing with doubts and uncertainty, but you're still able to see something that's bigger than anything you ever thought of before. And Jonathan, Bible prophecies show us many of the effects of Jesus' kingship. And for lack of time, let's just look at one small prophecy here from Daniel chapter 2.
And in the days of those kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, nor shall the sovereignty thereof be left to another people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever.
So the prophecy puts in place the clarity of, in just a few words, what Jesus came, lived, died, and was raised for. And it says that God's kingdom is going to take over. God, through Jesus, wipes away the sinful kingdoms of this world and sets up an unbreakable kingdom. For it to be established, it will overcome all other human rulers, and its sovereignty will bring peace and justice to all. That is just another manifestation of the legacy building block of joy. And that joy truly began. It truly got its start. It got its full traction when Jesus was raised up from the tomb.
But were you there when he rose from the grave? Cry, yeah. And I begin to tremble. I tremble. Were you there when he rose from the
The fact of the resurrection sealed the promise of the kingdom. It ensured that all that Jesus had come to put in motion would absolutely be accomplished, and his resurrection was the first step. 1 Corinthians.
But in fact, Christ has been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those who have died. For since death came through a human being, the resurrection of the dead has also come through a human being. For as all die in Adam, so all will be made alive in Christ.
What a sweeping stroke of justice. All are included. The best part is that this is no afterthought. It is the well-devised and meticulously executed plan that God had in place all along. Back to Genesis.
Indeed, I will greatly bless you. And I will greatly multiply your seed as the stars of the heavens and as the sand which is on the seashore, and your seed shall possess the gate of their enemies. In your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice.
You see? All nations to be blessed. Let's get back to Peter and John.
Peter, do you remember that night Jesus asked us who we thought he was?
When he called me Satan?
Yeah.
Yeah, I called him...
Lord.
Lord.
Lord of all, Peter. We just didn't understand.
But he's gone.
No. He's risen.
He did it.
Peter, he's risen.
He's risen. He did it.
Do you hear that, world? He's risen. He's risen. He's risen.
He is risen. So how has this legacy of joy changed you? Are you willing to live with this as a core belief of your life, or is it just a happy thought? Be like Peter. Embrace the reality. He is risen.
Bright shining as the sun. Then when we first begun, that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm was blind, but now I see.
So for this morning, that's our rendition of the account of the death and life of Jesus Christ. And Jonathan, again, we have just a few seconds here, but when you see the incredible care that he gave to his disciples the night before, how he went through this amazing period of trial and torture and stayed faithful to the very end, what can you say?
And then he left us joy.
And that's the point. All of the building blocks of legacy built up to that last building block, which is joy. And it's joy because it's real, and it's real because the resurrection is real, and the resurrection of Jesus is the symbol of the fulfillment of the plan of God, which is the ransom and restitution for all of mankind. Folks, what could be better than that? I answer nothing. Nothing, nothing. We hope you've enjoyed being with us this morning as we've gone through an amazing event, the resurrection of Jesus and what it means to us. And hopefully you walk away from this inspired to be more fully devoted to what you believe to be important in the life of Jesus, reflected in your own life. For Jonathan and Rick and Christian Questions, we wish you a very, very happy Resurrection Sunday. And we'll be back again next week with another subject. But till then, Jesus is risen. We'll be back next week. Think about it.